Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The Israeli military has said the ceasefire has resumed in Gaza following an attack which killed Israeli soldiers and a subsequent wave of Israeli airstrikes that hospital sources say killed 44 people. US President Donald Trump said yesterday that Hamas leadership was not involved in the initial breach, but blamed some rebels within. So where does it leave the ceasefire deal that Trump announced with so much fanfare last week? Alistair Campbell, host of The Rest is Politics and former Downing Street Director of Communications and Strategy for Tony Blair, joins us on the line. Alistair, good morning.
Hi, Pat.
Now, we expected there would be some hiccups along the way, and in the week there certainly have been some breaches by both sides.
There's no doubt about that. And, you know, we said when we discussed this last time that the 20-point plan is less a plan than a wish list and a framework. And the question is, there are always going to be things that will challenge that and people and organizations that might not have the same commitment as there is in the framework that's been set out. The question then is, what do you do when that happens? Now, Trump's reaction was to be very dismissive, as you said in the introduction. Usual suspicions that both sides, be that Netanyahu or elements within Hamas, want this to, as it were, to kind of, you know, keep a sense of conflict. But I think on every one of those points, we said, you know, this was phase one, but now it requires real focus and determination and organization to keep it on track and to keep moving forward. And, you know, this is where the comparison with the post-Good Friday Agreement comes in, because of course the Good Friday Agreement was not the end of the Northern Ireland peace process. It was just a big moment. And the problem with the way that Trump presented everything last week, you know, peace in our time, ending 3 centuries of history, 3,000 years of history, all this stuff, was that he really gave the sense that this was all done and dusted, when anybody knows that it's not.
Now, his use of language when he was talking about the breaches by armed groups, which might be Hamas or might not be, that he said that Hamas had been rambunctious and have been doing some shooting, but that might be some rebels within. Either way, it's going to be handled properly, toughly, but properly. I mean, it's not exactly the language of a very serious man.
Well, it's the language of Donald Trump, isn't it? I mean, that's what he does. He's got a very colourful turn of phrase. He speaks, he's got this sort of curious way of speaking as though he's half commentator, half actor. You see this a lot in relation to Ukraine. People sort of say, well, you're the guy who can sort this out. And then he sort of talks as though he's almost divorced from it. And, you know, I think that there's a real danger, the sense that this all depends on him. I think he has determinedly and willfully undermined the United Nations, for example, since he came in for the start of his second term. And the truth is that the scale of devastation and the problems that lie ahead, you're going to need a lot more than one guy, and one guy who's very volatile and very, very unpredictable and with a low attention span to actually keep this thing on track. I was a friend of mine and former colleague, Tom Fletcher, who is in charge of the United Nations humanitarian effort, and I was talking to him over the weekend, and he's just been in Gaza. He said it's just utterly mind-blowing, the state of devastation. He said, he actually said that the people who were there, the Gazans, have got this sort of incredible ability to sort of just keep going. But he said he and all of his team who were in there, just, you know, that he said, you just find yourself, it's impossible not to weep, literally not to weep at what you see. And the scale of it is off the chart. So that needs real international focus. And Whether Donald Trump can ever provide that remains to be seen. It's probably a good thing that Witkoff, his envoy, and Jared Kushner, whatever their reasons and motivations may be, that at least they're still staying engaged. I believe that they're there again today. But this is going to require, you know, real international focus. And I you know, it's sort of every time that we hear, you know, I turned on the BBC News this morning and literally the first two words were Donald Trump says, first three words Donald Trump says. And, you know, in the end, it's going to take a lot more than Donald Trump to keep this show on the road.
Now, the boys who are arriving, Jared Kushner and Witkoff, I mean, they have money as their agenda always. That's the nature of those two particular creatures. They see opportunities. Now, a byproduct of that might be some stability, but really it's about the almighty dollar and making more of them.
Well, the thing is, they're both very, very wealthy already, and
that never makes any difference to rich people.
No, it doesn't. I'm not sort of disputing that money is a really big part of that. But the fact is, I mean, I was talking to Tony Blair last week, who was saying that, you know, he actually has quite a lot of time for these two. He thinks that actually they are quite serious. Now, I've never met them. I've got no idea. I've got no way of making an independent judgment. But that's the world that we're now in, this sense of, if you like, a conflation of public and private life. You know, you mentioned Kushner. Kushner has become independently phenomenally wealthy on the back of the deals that he did while he was working alongside Trump in term one, particularly with the Saudis. Now, in a previous era, that would have been seen as kind of completely unacceptable. But we're now in this very different era where strongman leadership, the sense that there's nothing wrong with sort of mixing politics and business. And it is a new world, and it's a dangerous new world, because, of course, the other thing that this means is that it depends on relationships rather than principles and institutions. And I think it's the undermining of the principles and institutions that is making the world such a dangerous place right now.
Now, you've been talking to Tony Blair about his role in all of this. How does he see it? I mean, he is to be kind of running the show as a political figure, but the chairman of the board will be the Donald.
I think we're a long way from that happening yet, because, of course, this board of peace that he talks about, and as you say, Donald Trump as the chair. But look, I think Tony is clearly a controversial figure, and some people like him and some people don't. But he's in the almost 20 years now since he stopped being prime minister, he's always stayed engaged in the Middle East, and not, let me say, because he's interested in the money there, but because actually he's got a real sense of commitment. He did the United Nations job and I think felt very frustrated during that period. He didn't really have his hands on the levers. And I think he's in that place. I don't think, look, Tony's a big enough figure. I don't think he cares what position he holds in terms of titles and status and all that. But I think that if there's a role for him, I think he'll want to play it, and I think he should, and I think it'd be good for that region if he does, because even though there is the whole sort of Iraq thing that people throw at him the whole time, he has spent a lot of time investing in building political relationships on all sides over there, and I think it'd be foolish not to use him.
I'm just thinking of his own legacy. I mean, people who look back on the Iraq war, and they look at what Colin Powell said at the United Nations, which I, even as I watched it, I didn't believe a word of it, about the weapons of mass destruction being hidden all over Iraq. I didn't believe it. It wasn't a convincing presentation. But it looked like Tony was led and said by the US president at that time, George W. Bush and Colin Powell. And your legacy to be...
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com. /footballfuelpointsTC.
Ledden said twice.
Well, you see, I, you say you didn't believe Colin Powell. We did believe. We, sitting where we were, regardless of what, admittedly, a lot of the intelligence was perhaps coming from the Americans, but based on what the British intelligence were telling us, we did believe. that there was a real threat. And look, I accept that for some people, they don't get beyond Iraq when it comes to Tony Blair's legacy. But, you know, I just mentioned the Good Friday Agreement. I think that alone puts Tony's legacy into a very, very good place. And likewise, here I am sitting in London, where the economy is not in great shape, where public services are under real pressure. And part of Tony's legacy was the fact that he, you know, he rebuilt both of those things. And so you can, in a sense, this is the thing with historical figures. We had the same last week with Margaret Thatcher. There was a big debate. It was a 100th anniversary of her birth, and people were sort of assessing her role. And, you know, it's, as ever, some people thought she was the most amazing leader who ever lived, and other people thought she was absolutely terrible. You're just going to have to live with that, I think. And but my point is here today, forgetting legacy, I think here and now, could Tony Blair play a useful role in the Middle East? I've got no doubt whatsoever that he can.
Now, the prospects of, you said it will be quite a while before that authority comes into any kind of meaningful being. I mean, they may constitute it before it can actually get down to work. A lot of things have got to happen. I mean, the disarming of Hamas, for instance, and the Israelis saying if they cross the yellow line, we will blow them to kingdom come, as we have been doing. This is a very tenuous kind of peace.
Yeah, it's fragile. It's very fragile. And the fact that, you know, your news bulletin was saying there, you know, Israel announced that they're back to the ceasefire. Well, that was because, why? Because it was, you know, there was quite a lot of activity over the weekend, and people were being killed, and there were, you know, you had the plumes of smoke up in the air again. And it doesn't take much for either side to be provoked into saying that the other side is in breach of their ceasefire agreement. And the question that arises then is how do those sides react? And, you know, you mentioned Hamas disarming. You know, and I made the point earlier, Good Friday Agreement wasn't the end of it. I mean, how many hundreds and thousands of hours were then post-Good Friday Agreement were discussing the decommissioning issue? It's a massive issue. And I think that there is a problem. You mentioned Trump's communications. There is a problem with this black and white, primary colours style of communication that he has, where everything is great or everything is terrible, and if it's terrible, he'll fix it. The world's just more complicated than that. Now, you know, fair play, he got them, he did manage to get this, get Israel to agree to this 20-point plan, and then he bought in most of the Arab countries, etc. But it's so fraught and so complicated, and I just think it would benefit from a little less of the hype and a little less of the overstatement and a bit more of a kind of focus on reality.
Now, the extraordinary thing is, of course, that the war was essentially funded by the United States. And so you fund the war to the point where Gaza City and a lot of the strip entirely is demolished, as you said. And then you bring about this fantastic peace, which will require huge investment to go into the rebuilding. And Trump is like a man who never buys his round. You know, if Ukraine wants weapons, Europe has to pay for them. They'll be American weapons, yeah. We'll make a dollar on selling them, but we won't participate. And in the same way, in the rebuilding of Gaza, he'll want the Arab-rich oil states to cough up, and maybe other countries as well, but he won't put his hand in his pocket.
I think that's a fair assessment. And of course, if you go back to, I can remember being at one of the conferences to put together the fund for the rebuilding of Bosnia. And, you know, countries, the world economy was maybe in better shape, but countries like the US, the UK, Germany, Japan, we were talking huge sums of money that people were saying, yep, we've all got, this is when we talk about the international community, this is what we mean. And when you see those pictures of devastation, and, you know, honestly, there was some stuff on social media yesterday, people driving through virtually the whole strip and just sort of taking pictures out of the window of a car. It was absolutely mind-blowing. And so you're talking about a multi-billion dollar rebuilding program. You're absolutely right to pose that question. Where is the money going to come from that? And you're also right to say that Trump is basically saying, on Ukraine, he's saying, right, Europe, it's in your area, you deal with it. And on Israel, Gaza, and on the rebuilding of Gaza, he's saying, well, look, you lot are in the Middle East and the Gulf, you lot pay for it. And it's, you know, he's happy to be a global leader when he's getting the plaudits and the headlines and people are flying into Sharm el-Sheikh to kiss the ring. But then when it comes to the follow-through of the things that need to be done, less willing.
And that's the problem. As I say, they funded the war and then they want other people to fund the peace. Anyway, the No Kings demonstration, I'm sure you followed some of the activities over the weekend, at the biggest protests ever seen on the streets of the United States in cities and towns all over the place, bigger than Vietnam War protests, bigger than anything that's been seen before. And then the response from Trump, kind of a witty response on one level, saying thank you to the No Kings protesters because someone wanted to come along and become a king. And I'm happy they're doing away with him because I would then be reaffirmed as president. That was one response. And the other was a stupid AI cartoon he put out.
It wasn't just stupid. It was revolting. Go on, Pat. I'm going to test your skills of family broadcast. How do you describe it?
Well, basically, he takes off, Trump, in pilot's gear in a naval jet fighter, and then he turns around and he drops excrement on the crowd below, the No Kings protesters below.
Well done, well done. That was very, very
It just
tasty.
Seems so juvenile to me that a man like this should actually even have any hand actor part in that.
And... You know, and it's, but of course, it's not, this is now a pattern. It's not the first time. It's like, you know, when he saw Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer, the Democrat leaders in Congress, and they had them inside the Oval Office, and no sooner had they left than he put out a fake AI video where they were saying things they had never said, and Jeffries was wearing a Mexican sombrero, and Schumer was saying, I'm not surprised nobody's votes for us. We're a pair of losers. We don't know what's going on. Donald Trump's the only guy. And it is, as you say, unbelievably childish. And it also, the other thing I think it does is it, because a lot of what I would argue bad guy leaders around the world are looking at this and thinking, well, this is how you do it, because say what you like about Trump, but he's the guy who lost and then won again. So there must be something in the way that he does this stuff. And, you know, I think that misinformation and disinformation are a real threat now. They're a real threat to our democracies, to our education systems, and so forth. So to have the so-called leader of the free world seeing it all just as yet another tactic for him to be able to sort of shape the narrative that he's trying to shape is actually quite dangerous. And the way they do this, those who use AI in this way, there's two things they use. One is fear and one is humor. And he tends to go for the humor bit. His supporters will think, oh, that's really funny. He's flying a plane and he's dropping a load of excrement on the heads of these protesters. But I actually think that the humor is what prevents us from seeing sometimes how dangerous it is.
Now, the questions of how this goes forward, one of my listeners says, if Hamas are required to disarm, then Israel should be required to disarm. There's only one aggressor in the Middle East, and it's not Hamas. I mean, the idea that the IDF are forced to some way, they won't disarm, of course, but that they could be forced to stay their hand when, you know, there's some minor firing on members of the IDF, and then they respond with aircraft bombardment.
I think you've got to be careful not to make that direct read-across comparison. I mean, Israel is a democracy, and we'll see whether Netanyahu survives the next election. Hamas is dedicated literally to wiping out Israel, and part of the deal that has been made is that Hamas shouldn't be part of the future governance of Gaza. So I think that direct comparison is a bit over the top.
But the idea is that on the Gaza Strip, there is one authority, that's the Israel and the IDF, armed to the teeth with drones and backup and all the rest, and everybody
absolutely
else has got to be defenseless.
Well, no, but what I think was interesting about the deal and the plan, as it were, and this is where I think I could see Tony Blair's hand at work, was the sense that what is required is a Gaza where the Gazans can live without the you know, turn any corner and there's another Israeli soldier there. That's got to go. And likewise, it can't be a Gaza in which Hamas are operating either. That's the kind of, they're the two big pillars of a change. So that I think is a fair point, but I think a direct equation between the two is not quite right.
Back to the No Kings protest, finally, Alistair, and the question of what those numbers on the streets will be saying to Trump and the GOP, because there was a huge demonstration in Texas, you know, a thoroughly red state. There were, of course, lots of demonstrations in blue cities, but the Reds were not left out of this particular effort over the weekend. So what will Trump be thinking in terms of going into midterms?
Heaven knows. I mean, he, of course, came straight out and said they were very small, they were very ineffective, these people are losers. They'd also built them up. Their whole line of attack was that anybody who doesn't support the government is Antifa, is Hamas. I mean, it's just sort of, it's absolute deliberate polarization and essentially dividing people into their tribes. I think anybody who's looking at that rationally will think, I always used to say when we had protests on the street, for every one person who goes out, at least 10 people think about it. In other words, the protests are large in number, but they indicate that there are even more people than that who think this government is just not right and that the way they're operating is not right. And framing it in the context of this No Kings, the sense that Trump is an autocrat and with dictatorial tendencies, that then I think that is a genuine fear that cuts through. I must say, though, I met some American students last week, and I was really struck by, I didn't sort of grill them much on their politics, but I was really struck by how some of these Trumpian narratives have become really powerfully embedded. I mean, we ended up having a big argument because they've absolutely bought this idea that here in Europe and in Britain, for example, that we're not committed to free speech. It's one of these things that they've just driven into the narrative that only they believe in free speech. They who are, you know, suing newspapers, reviewing licenses of broadcasters, kicking journalists out of the Pentagon and so forth. But I think that if you're a member of the Trump team, I mean, heaven knows what goes on inside Trump's head, but if you're one of the calmer heads around him, I think it's quite hard to look at those protests and think that this government's very popular. And of course, the worry would be that he just thinks, right, okay, well, if the midterms are going to be really, really bad, we have to find a way either of not having them or finding a way of being dismissive of the result if we lose.
Alistair Campbell, co-host with Rory Stewart of The Rest is Politics, former Downing Street Director of Communications and Strategy for Tony Blair. Thank you very, very much.
News Talk's Cash Machine. The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.